Good evening and welcome. My name is Scroobius Pip and this is a public service announcement. The following episode you're about to listen to is a drunk cast. As ever with the drunk casts, we're getting kind of drunk. There will be some things that are quite offensive. There will be very silly things said. All of it, I assure you, is intended with goodwill and love and passion. But if you are easily offended, maybe skip these episodes. On with the podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is part three. We're starting to get a little bit tipsy. It's the end of year drunk cast. We're starting to get a bit loose. I hope you've enjoyed part one and part two. If you haven't listened yet, go and start at the beginning. Come on the full journey with us. Either in this episode or the next one or the one after, I get the name of a film wrong. I've not even corrected it yet. Let me go and have a look at what the name of the film is. I think I thought it was The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which it's not. It was a film with Jason Vanderbeek. I think it's part four that it actually... Rules of Engagement. Rules of Engagement. I think this comes up actually in part four, but I'm getting ahead of the game. So, yeah, apologies for getting a thing wrong. I don't like to do that. SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com, Patreon.com/ScroobiusPip, Twitch.tv/ScroobiusPip, yo. This is part three of the Drunk Cast. I genuinely apologise for all that is to come. There's some tears to come. There's some mayhem and laughter, but there's some tears to come. So keep tuning in. Yeah, this is part three. Let's go. Right, well, we are back for part three. Chris is eating crisps. Stu is on his phone.
Sorry.
What are you looking at, mate?
I'm not, just posting a little picture of us.
You're posting a little picture of us, mate. I'm going to eat the last of Christmas cakes I got.
They were very scrummy. Christmas cakes?
Easter cake, sorry. Would you like it,
no,
mate? I've had more than
no,
you.
No, I'm going to take it. No, because I had two of those other lovely chalky ones.
Popping it there for you, mate. That's for you.
Do you want... No, I was going to say shit. We don't need to share it.
No, that's for you,
mate. I feel
weird
about sharing something like that.
Yes, Stu Turl always gets annoyed if people are ordering a takeaway and someone's like, oh, should we share a side or share this and that? He's like, fucking just get your own.
No, yeah.
Get mine,
what food will you share and what won't you? I won't share. I can't share like a bowl of ice cream.
That's ridiculous.
What kind of animal would ever go?
With your missus though. Actually, often I'll be having ice
I draw the exception to Molly, but sometimes she's had to talk me around on that. Sometimes I'm like, I don't really want to because I just think you're putting your spoon back in like liquid. There's something about it that doesn't go well. But with
mine's
your girlfriend,
more just I want all the ice cream.
I wouldn't share a sausage.
One of the questions,
mouth to mouth.
One of the questions on Instagram was, what if you had to eat your body weight in a particular food in 1 week? What would you choose? And mine was instantly ice cream because that's easy because I've just not got a limit on ice cream.
Nando's chips,
hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs. Hot dogs. Hot dogs. With the bun with or the just bun. The sausage? Just swallowing them. Just swallowing them whole.
Either or. It's like a seagull.
Oak. We used to do the food challenges where we used to get like fucking pallet load of fucking cream eggs and we've done the pizza up buff, how many slices you can eat.
I just mentioned Stu Turl. When we both worked in Basel and we'd line up our lunch breaks and go, me, Stu Turl and Steve French, we'd go to Pizza Up Buffet and have scores. So your breadsticks and stuff like that are only half a point, but a slice is a point. Mm. And yeah, we'd see how many we can get through.
It's a dangerous game.
It's not a way to enjoy food, lads,
no.
I've realised in time. We'd come out
of
that feeling fucking awful. Yeah, we'd feel terrible.
All the rest of your day. I don't know, as a kid, you bounce back much quicker than you do
as
an adult.
It's a working class thing, though. The whole kind of, you need to eat as much as you can get because it's free or because you paid for it, rather than looking out for your health or well-being.
I think it's just a greedy prick thing.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Where are we going?
What are we talking about?
No, you said you were going
to
start.
I did the big reveal of my surgery. Yeah, I've not talked about this anywhere. I told both of you guys because I knew I wanted to talk about it here. But in August, I had a hair transplant, which
Duke found hilarious as the hairiest person he knows having more hair put in. But yeah, it's something I thought about for a bit, and I what kind of pushed me over the line was hearing
us
Nick
constantly
talk
mock
about
you
it.
For balding.
Well, no, Nick talked about it. Your mate Nick, he talked about it when he was on your podcast, was it? He talked about it somewhere. I'm sure he talked about it to you. And that really highlighted that it's a normal thing. And it's a weird one because I don't know if I've gone particularly more bald than I was before. Like at school, I remember being picked on because I've always had a large crown. So I only had on the top of my head.
Sorry.
100%.
Did you picture like a royal crown then when he said that? Yeah.
No, like a large crown there. But I found, I was joking with the people at the surgery about this. I was like, has there been like a spike in recent years? I'm like, yeah, it's become far more normalised and we think it's because more people just see it as okay. And if you've got a problem with yourself and you can fix it, then why not? And I was like, it's because of ring cams. Mm-hmm. Every time I come up on my fucking ring cam, because it's right over your edge, mm-hmm. shining a spotlight on you, I look like the baldest cunt in the world. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, I see that every time I pop out to put the bins out or get a parcel. So I completely think it's that. And yeah, it's something that played on my mind a bit. And when I shoot in debris, they would do a bit of powdering because if we're doing these overhead shots. And because I'm quite white and pale anyway, so it stands out more, I guess. Mm. So they'd kind of powder a bit and it brought it to my attention more. So I looked into it and I wanted to hold off. I've reached out to, I think I told you the name, it's Capital Hair Solutions, I think. And they're like, they've got one in Brentwood. Mm. In Brentwood. So I popped over and chatted with them. And he was a nice lad. He had a great sell because he takes out this book and we've been chatting for ages and he takes this book and like, here's someone before, here's after, here's before,
here's someone
after.
Before and here's when they didn't get it done. They're dead now.
Yeah, yeah. But then he gets one, he goes, here's the before and that's me. I'm the after. Mm. And he's got this amazing head of hair and he looks, it looks great. So I sold on it and they saw, like I followed him and that and they're like, you've got a lot of followers now. Maybe we could do some kind of deal. And I said no at the time because I was like, I want to talk about it, number one, when I'm comfortable to talk about it, because I think all of these things should be an individual choice. So I was like, I don't want to do it when I'm not comfortable talking about it. And number two, I don't want to sway how I feel about it or how I feel it went by thinking, oh, I got it for free or I got it cheap. So it was still quite reasonable. But I think I went in too relaxed about it because I went in excited. I was like, it's going to be fucking like, because science is amazing.
Yeah.
Like I was buzzing over the science of it. And what happened on the day, they numbed up my head and that bit was painful because there's loads of injections in your head and that was horrible. And you're laying on your front for about half hour, which is weirdly uncomfortable if you're not in bed and spreading out or whatever and can't move. But then I was all numbed up and I popped on the Woodstock documentary on Netflix. So I watched all three parts of that and they removed 4,000 hairs
from your fingers
from like a strip at the back of my head, so it's kind of unnoticeable because there's loads of hair there. And then so it's in three parts, but they numb you up and they remove, so it's like it's 2,000 actual bits. But there'll be a few that are three hairs, a lot that are one hair,
so
and a few that are two hairs.
So do they remove them one at a time?
They remove it one at a time as a little,
really?
Like with the skin. So it's a little thing. So they've then got a tray with a little thing of skin and a little hair in it.
So they pull out the skin too?
And then so that's done by like the helpers. Mm. And then the surgeon comes in and he's the gardener. He makes all the holes. So he made over 2,000 holes in my head and they'll only do it in the right places and where there's not hair already because it can stop other hair growing and stuff like that. So I'm sitting there for like an hour or 90 minutes. This guy's just going... and you can hear it and feel it going into your head.
Was that when he's planting them?
He's making the holes. Yeah. So he's just making the holes now. He's just making... the holes there because he's choosing the patterns. It has to go with the natural pattern of your hairline, all this kind of thing.
Did he comment on your massive crown?
I didn't look around. I genuinely thought you said, did he come on your massive crown? I now realize you said comment on my massive crown, but no. And then the others come in and he helps and all three of them are planting and they're just putting them all in and they're putting all these little bits in and then you get bandaged up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, right, for 2 days, is it 2 days or more? It might be 3 days. You can't bend over.
You can't bend over?
Because things can fall out. So you have to keep your head upright. Like you have to sleep.
You still have the bandages on?
Yeah. You've got the basic bandages on, but that bit, I think, is kind of exposed all the time. Yeah, so the bandages are around this bit, the bit that they've taken the hair from, because that's all wrapped up. The top bit is kind of open, and it's there. And they shave your head first. So it's really short hairs.
Yeah.
And that spun me out a bit. I did it. I had it all done. I was like, this is great. And then I had the talk through afterwards, and that fucking got in my head a bit, because there is a lot. It's like a 2 week thing. If you can't do this, you've got to sleep with a neck pillow and be upright for 10 days or 14 days. You can't roll over, you can't lay down, you can't bend over, you can't touch your head. You've got to spray it with this stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you bang it, it could be a problem. You can't put a hat on for the first 3 weeks or something, or 2 weeks. So that was the first bit of me starting to spin out a bit, because I was like,
yeah,
I haven't taken this seriously. I haven't thought about the fact it's 4,000 bits of surgery or whatever. So that spun me out a bit. But my old man was wicked. He picked me up. B was amazing, kind of just looking after me and that. But even that, like, I get home and Finley's jumping about and I'm like, right, I can't lean over to him. And I've got to try and calm him down and keep upright. And he can't go anywhere near my head. And that was my birthday week. So we went away to a cottage. And that was all kind of planned, because I was like, I'd rather go somewhere just private so I can relax a bit and not be thinking about, I'll bump into people. And because I said, I had no intention to keep it a secret, because I think it's a positive thing if you can do things that make you feel more comfortable. But control. Like everyone talks about how open I am on the podcast or in music or whatever. But that's because I get to choose over what I'm open about and choose when I'm open about it. So we went away to this amazing Airbnb in Wales, and man, that week was fucking rough. Like lack of sleep, pain, headaches, all that kind of thing. And all natural, but you add lack of sleep to anything and it just makes it all just fucking 10 times worse. I'm proper miserable. I'm proper like, this was really hurting more than I was expecting. I'd heard, again, exactly as you were saying, Chris, I'd heard of a couple of people who were like, the first 2 days are rough. After that, you're basically back to normal.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
No.
After the 2 weeks.
And you compare yourselves to them as well.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Like after the 2 weeks, great. Literally forgot about it. But in all that time, you can't shower or get water on your head. You can't do anything. So it was really odd. I just felt the pain was more than I was expecting on that. But I said, after that, it was a breeze. Like when you get to actually like have a shower and the scabs all come off and all that kind of thing.
Oh, I bet with that.
Because that's not allowed. Like you're not allowed to touch it for 2 weeks.
They have to fall off.
Yeah, or they have to just be there. Right. Or they have to just be there. Like they're not going to fall off. It's not until the 2 weeks when you get to go and
so when you shower, is that how the scabs fall
off? And then they continue coming off for like a few weeks after that.
So did your head look like a tortoise shell for a bit? Like
a bit. Oh, actually, this is the best bit. Why didn't I tell you?
Pictures.
So I reckon he did. Don't show me this as a joke.
Don't show me any of your massive crown.
You'll love this.
It's disgusting.
So I reckoned, I was like, right, it's mainly here, like in the crown, but then there's a little bit in the middle. If I have a part and it's quite a prominent part, so I was like, a little bit there maybe. So he did it and I took a picture and it's like that.
Dick and balls.
It's a cock and balls. He's literally drawn a cock and balls on my head. That's in the amazing. Little injections.
Wow.
But yeah, that was like 4,000 hairs planted.
Wow. No wonder
in my little bald head. And then they tape it up and all this. And again, I went in with a full head of hair. But I've had shaved my head a load of times. Yeah. It's not the end of the world.
I can't help whenever I see someone with this. I've seen guys who've just had it done on the train, and it's so fascinating to me. And it takes every ounce of my willpower not to just want to just go up to him and go, sorry, mate, can I just stare at your head for an hour?
That's why I wanted to talk about it a bit, but because I said, I think as a scientific thing, it's fascinating. Because loved it. Once I was numb, like the dude was like, turn the TV up a bit, because it can be quite an unpleasant feeling and sound, because you can't feel, but you can kind of feel and hear. just all these holes in your head. But I think the science is
the
amazing.
The skin's quite thick, isn't
it? On the kind of reveal of it, I don't know if it's done the thing yet, because
the hair grows through and then falls out, doesn't it?
It grows through and then falls out, and really, they say, so I'm on 5 months now, and really it's 6 to 12 months is when you're meant to really see the difference. So at first you will feel it's got worse because the hairs that were there all fall out.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you're like, oh fuck, I've had all this done, it's gone wrong. At the moment, I don't know if you can see or tell
I can, it looks a mess.
You wouldn't have seen or told much anyway because I'm 6'4", so people don't know. And when you and I discussed it, you were like, yeah, I've got a bit of stuff, but it's like no one knows or sees it.
It's being told.
It looks good, man.
Because of being told. But as I said, it's interesting and... Yeah, I just thought it's fascinating. It's a weird one. My review is, I guess we'll wait and see if it works.
Yeah.
I
think it's hard to tell. But again, you wouldn't have noticed particularly anyway, because his thing when he looked was like, well, this is good because you've got a really thick head of hair in general. It's not like you're thinning in general. You've got a lot of hair, so it should be good. But I said, I'm not always looking at the back of my head. I know that if it's coming through, it'll probably be a thin version of coming through now, and then that'll get... Yeah. Thicker and thicker, but it also meant I've got a wicked collection of caps now. I bought loads of really good caps because, again, particularly in the growing out period of a shaved head anyway, shit.
Yeah.
And I'm streaming now, as we discussed. It's like, I didn't tell anyone on streaming. I was like, oh, I've got a week off from my birthday. And then I came back when I was comfortable with just a shaved head. I was just like, I've shaved my head. It's not a big deal. But then after that, I was like, I'm putting caps on all the time because I feel weird being growing out hair or bald or where it was starting to come through, and I could kind of notice if I lean forward, there's bits that are clearly still scarred and all that kind of thing. So, I've upped my cap collection.
Would you have it done? I mean, you've got quite thick hair, haven't you?
Like same as Pip, though. It's the crown.
Oh, my God, yeah. never do that again.
But, yeah.
That was a joke one. That was for comedy. I was falling off my chair and shot.
I literally thought you'd fallen off.
You stacked
it. I was doing it in a shot.
Oh, God.
Oh, them acting lessons paid off, mate.
I had to turn it down and everything.
I'd 100% get it done. Mm. Like,
I was literally talking to Molly about this the other day.
I said, I thought the guys I went to were the bollocks. I thought they were really good. And he was like, look, I don't want to hard sell you on anything.
Yeah.
But my kind of thought was, I tried a few of them jelly baby type things that you can get them into stimulate hair growth and all. I was like, I didn't see a difference because, as you say, I've got a really thick head of hair anyway. So it's a very specific area. Yeah, and I don't think, similar to weight loss, you can't really target specific areas. Yeah, so I said, I've tried this stuff. I tried the cream or whatever it was, or some oil thing, and I didn't notice any difference, but I'm not keeping a good eye on it. So I could cut through the kind of... You don't have to hard sell me. I want to go for that. But
my mate was doing the tablets,
can that lower your sex drive?
It messed my mate up, and my hairdresser had the tablets as well, and he said he'd never once struggled with his mental health, and he said within about 2 months of time he was suicidal.
Wow. Because I've heard that a few times, but it's really individual. It's really
your testosterone. Yeah, I ain't about that. But I remember being about 27, and I remember it was weird. We were on we were at the Great Escape of all things. I used to love going to the Great Escape. Great festival there,
Brighton.
Yeah, and I remember getting out of the shower with a bunch of babes. I remember getting out of the shower and looking in the mirror, and the light was shining down on my head. And I've got to give my fiance the credit for this this nickname, Cress Glasson, because he looked like I had a Cress head. Because it was just like, it's like in that, the light bounces off your hair and you see it, it's so thin. And I was like, fuck, that's your mortality. And you think your hair is a self-image. And I've always had terrible hair. Like it just doesn't grow in a particularly good way. So... For me, I don't think like someone like Mark who's lost his hair. For him, Mark had gorgeous hair. He was a very handsome man. So for him, it must have been even more worrying because he went almost fully bald and then did a skinhead you don't need to hear that
story. Bullied him too much.
Bullied him a little. I didn't. I just caned him because he was being rotten to me.
That's
the same
thing.
Yeah. and for a long while, because I can't stick to anything for very long, for a couple of months, I used some of that like thickening shampoo and it didn't work. And I was in a little bit of a panic. And then I did come to acceptance, and I guess most men do, or any human being who goes through some form of physical change that is almost irreversible. And now I'm happy. And actually, weirdly, I'm happy because my hair kind of thinned at 27 and then has really slowly thinned since then. Like, I sometimes see pictures that my partner lovely takes while I'm watching TV and goes,
of what I had since we've got Finley, because B will be taking pictures of me playing with Finley, which will generally mean my head's down. Yeah. That's when I started noticing more and more. Like, I don't, and I said, I'm not a fan of pictures of myself anyway. All the pictures I post of Finley are of him and his own or things like that. But that was something as well. If you've got a partner for some reason keeps catching pictures
it's
of you,
weird because
it can make you go, oh.
Society in this day and age, you'd have never seen, like 15-20 years ago, no one was seeing those pictures. And now
I think it's really interesting
because I see that version of yourself.
I think there's two things here. I think number one, be comfortable with yourself, be
one
comfortable
way,
in your own skin
whatever.
But if there's something that is repeatedly getting to you a bit and you can fix it or can afford to fix it or whatever else, then I don't think there should be any shame in that. It's why I was like, I want to talk about it on the drunk cast because I know that we'll have a proper conversation about it and it won't be kind of a taboo as such because, yeah.
It's a very, very complicated thing, that as well, like self-image and how you feel and self-worth.
Really. And we talked about it a bit on the last a drunk cast, I think, on body image and all that kind of thing. Yeah, and all of us at points have kind of been like, ah, fuck, I hate hate looking in the mirror or whatever. It's like, it's ridiculous, but
it just reminds me what everyone else is missing out on.
Yeah.
I've got friends who've had, you know, breast implants or partners or whatever. And I don't know, a girl who I thought was flawlessly attractive in my youth hated her self-image, like really had body dysmorphia. Yet she was the kind of person who she was a good mate of mine. And there wasn't really any one of my mates who didn't meet her. And then at some point, actually, you never did this. And I'm sure you met her, Pip. But most of my other mates would meet her. And then at some point, I knew, would say to me, put in a good word. Because she was just...
I reckon I know who you're talking about.
She was so... She's so hot.
Yeah.
And she had breast implants. And she never felt any different. She was, you know, she still had like the self-esteem issues and all that, cracking tits before and after. and yet then I've had partners who were literally, and this, I've had this on multiple occasions, and it's just a really sad thing that, regardless of who, you know, whether you're male or female, what problems, issues you have with your genitals or breasts, but I've had partners, as I say, more than one female who is terrified of taking their bra off. Mm. And at points, she's laughing.
That's because it's like around you.
Partners, not strangers.
Right. Clarify that.
Not strangers in a toilet cubicle in a train station.
Take it off!
who are terrified. They're like really, really ashamed. And, you know, really... And one of those partners had a breast implant.
Just one.
had breast implants. And she was like, really cracking, beautiful. And she had breast implants. And it actually did resolve the insecurity there. And it's funny because, so when we start this conversation, it's like, it is different strokes for different folks. Like
nuanced, isn't it?
It is very nuanced. Like some people... It can be the solution. And for other people, it's not answering the core problem. And knowing what that is so important. And learning to be happy with your body. And as you say, can you make the call? Like I say this often to Molly, like about, I'm quite moly, world record moly. Mm-hmm. And Molly's like, what are you going on about? Because sometimes...
A cracking set of tits ain't going to sort that out, mate.
I don't know. Let's not rule it out. Hear him out. Hear him out, Stu. Don't shoot him down.
Yeah.
I want to see where this goes.
I've got my designer penis now and I want a set of tits. All right? And I do say to her, like, I've done some very strange things. You know, I've removed moles with, years ago, I removed them with some like blood wart cream and that scarred me. Yeah. And maybe that was just because I didn't, you know, as I said earlier, I'm not very good at, you know, repetitively applying cream to things that need to be. But I would probably remove a few of my moles. And it's not because I hate my body or particularly hate my moles. I'm very accepting of it. And
a few years ago, you went to see a surgeon, didn't you, about having it all removed?
I've had to have some removed because of cancer worries. Yeah. And I have spoken, and you're right, I have spoken to surgeons. That's right. I forgot about that, Stu, about having them removed, but the cost was so extortionate, and I wasn't like, this doesn't keep me up at night. And again, I'm very, very lucky with my partners, very kind partners who have never been like, you know, they've just been like, I don't really give a shit about your moles. And I, when you look at my naked body, which I recommend, it's very moley. It is like, you know, it's like Damien Hirst has dipped up, you know, his paint in, you know, his brush in brown paint and just flung it at me.
Yeah.
So I'm not, I don't feel, I've been very lucky with my partners that they haven't been judgmental.
It's probably Jackson Pollock, but
is he Jackson Pollock? Hirst does that. No, look at loads of, he's done loads of shit like that.
He puts like a cow in a fucking...
No, he's done loads of
anyway. I think you're completely right, and I've had this discussion a few times recently, and I think with body image stuff, and the thing that annoys me is your Rogans of the world all say you've got to do something about it, you've got to get healthy, and I think that can be really one dimensional, like a very straightforward. They will say, he said before, fat shaming. In a way, it's for someone's own good. It's for their own health and things like that, which I don't agree with. Because equally,
I think it leads to that person eating more.
Or being overweight can be bad for your health. But I don't know anyone who's done BJJ for a long length of time who hasn't had neck and spine injuries. So if we're ruling things out for the good of people's health, then let's get rid of BJJ. I don't agree with that either. But I do think the thing I've kind of come to say is if you've got some body image stuff, you need to do the work to resolve that. And that can either be physical work or mental work. And both are absolutely fine. Either you do the mental work to become comfortable with yourself and to love yourself, or you go, oh, actually, I want to change this. It's within my grasp. I'll do the exercise. I'll do this, I'll do that to do the physical work. And I said, I don't think either is better or worse. Yeah. They're both options.
Bizarrely.
You can do both. Both
bizarrely, I think ultimately it becomes that they almost walk hand in hand with each other. Like, and it doesn't almost matter what one you start first.
Yeah.
I think one begots the other either way. And and I think I've been banging on about this book or this audio book for fucking ages now. But James Clear's book Atomic Habits is just I honestly what we've had is that dickhead, that's Rishi Sunak, sorry, going on about, you know, you need to study maths till you're 18, and like principally I actually think maths is quite a useful skill throughout your life, and I'm not saying I'm 100% against that, but I just wanted to call him a dickhead. But I do also think that our education system has been perverted for a long time in terms of what our kids need to learn. What's important?
I tell you, who's been speaking well on this for years is James McAvoy. Just talking about the importance of the arts, particularly for working class kids. For working class kids, you're kind of told you need to get a trade and you need to do this and do that and just earn money. Whereas so many people who have excelled in the arts from working class backgrounds have done amazingly well and done really good. And the arts brings in so much money for our nation, you know, as and our economy. And it's really tunnel vision to go, maths is the solution, you all need to do maths. It's like, no, it's a great option. I said, I disagree with the whole, they never teach us how to do our taxes and our mortgages work. It's like, mate, you've got your whole life to get bored of that shit. I think it's important to go, well, let's look at physics and something you might never need, but maybe you will, and maybe you'll go down that route. And and all sorts of things. I think the youth should be finding what ignites you.
I think not till you're 18.
I think being exposed to all that is super important. But I also think that we don't teach kids important things like and this book like life skills and atomic
first aid.
Well, that's a really good shout, mate.
Stop shouting.
But Atomic Habits, his whole thing of how he came to start doing it and whatnot is fascinating, and it would teach anyone how you can if how to build a lifestyle that, that you want, but not through like these mad pressures that everyone else says. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that in terms of things like even like weight loss or, you know, and how counterproductive things like such as like fat shaming are to the individual who might be overweight. Like objectively, that person is in a situation between overweight to morbidly obese. And, you know, your comments might be, so my hand is accidentally pointing towards Stu. But like your comments might, like, and you know, Joe Rogan's intent might come, obviously comes from generally, he's attempting to do good and he's got it sussed on what he thinks is the right way. That's what we all do. It's called relative truth. But it can be damaging. But James Clear's book, I think for any human being and any kid, it should be taught at school about how to slowly adjust things in your life. And it's not about the end result. It's about just those tiny microscopic changes you can make in every day. But he goes so deep into the psychology of it.
I love it.
I'm getting a bit drunk now. But honestly, you it's weird. When I hear the book, sorry,
yeah, go
Dave, I'll let you talk in a second.
Go ahead.
But when I hear it, it's funny because you know that people will naturally... You, out of the thousands of people you might meet in your life and your close-knit family, you will know the odd individual who has just come across a lot of the stories. And you are that person.
That's one of the most interesting things about acting classes is when they'll teach you stuff and you go, oh, right, I already do that. Like, that's already something I've taken
act
on naturally.
Like
and yeah, act like I can. But on the fitness front, I honestly think the absolute key to fitness is... finding something that you actually enjoy. So for Stu, going and kickboxing or whatever else, something that you're going to be looking forward to rather than dreading. And the example I always give, and again, this would be a perfect one for Chris, and you'll both find it hilarious, the thought of it. But when I was in Canada filming and I didn't have access to much stuff or equipment stuff for my cardio because I couldn't go to gyms or anything, I'd pop on the Beyonce concert on Netflix and it's like 90 minutes or 2 hours long and I would dance my ass off in my little Airbnb.
Who runs the world? And again,
that's fucking, it's a fucking amazing cardio. If you think of how much, if you think, Chris, if you'd had a heart rate monitor on in some of the club nights, imagine the calories that you've burnt off. I mean, you're probably drunk and back with booze over the night, but if you want to get...
Yeah, but you've done 1,500 metres running away from the old bill at the end of most nights, didn't you?
If you want to do cardio and get really bored by going out and running or dread doing this, pop some kind of concert on or music on and spend an hour just getting your heart rate really high. That's fucking good cardio. Yeah. And there's all things like that that people go... oh, just the gym is horrible. I don't want to go, or I don't want to go out in the cold or whatever else. It's like, find something that you're going to go, I look forward to that, that once a week, no one's in, I pop on some fucking sad indie. No, it wouldn't work for you, Stu. It'll be too low tempo. Lower your heart rate. Just sidestepping from side to side.
Look at his Doc Martens.
For an hour. Yeah, maybe not.
Pop a cardio on and start me working. That ain't anywhere near as interesting as your. My favourite workout of yours in Canada is by far when you went and bought them kettlebells.
Yeah,
I have told so many people that story.
I told that story on Spencer Kite, this amazing MMA journalist, invited me on his podcast this week, and he was asking about Canada, and that story came up, and I was like, "Yeah, it's fucking horrible."
So good.
Just walked for over an hour with two kettlebells.
Well, that's a nice segue into something you want to discuss, which is Stuart Whiffin, MMA journalist.
Yes, Stuart Whiffin, MMA journalist. I noted this because it was fucking a beautiful thing that it's within this year, really, that you've attended UFC events as media.
been there
other journalists and with Dana White there and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
How's that been, man? Because again, it's beautiful because that's something that we've talked about every drunk cast for years as just drunk idiots. And now you're sat there in a nice shirt and that, and you've got your recording stuff and all that. And you've
and a lanyard.
And a lanyard. You're there as media. How's that been?
That's so cool.
I completely forgot about that happening this year, really. But yeah, that's fucking crazy.
That's because I spend the whole year prepping for this podcast.
For those that don't know, I set up an MMA podcast with the actor Blake Harrison. And through Blake's having a profile of such. We managed to get some fighters on, and the podcast gained a bit of traction. And then we got invited to UFC London, and we got asked if we'd like to attend as media. And so we went to the media day and we interviewed all the fighters. And then when it got to the event, it was crazy. The first one, Blake was cage side. The second one, I was cage side. And then afterwards, we then interviewed the fighters after the fights. And yeah, it was bananas.
Mad,
absolutely,
right?
Bananas.
Just
yeah,
being a completely proper part of all of it.
Yeah. And not just UFC, Cage Warriors as well has been a highlight. Just getting to be involved in that and getting to speak to and seeing the fighters coming through and going up into the UFC, and it's super exciting, you know, and getting to speak to people that people would know, like Paddy the Baddy, and seeing him become a big, you know, a popular name, and you know, and then
become an unpopular name. Yeah, keep going. We can move on, but we don't have to go into that.
But I got a message from Blake yesterday, just saying there's something happening. Lands into John O'Groats charity thing that some fighters are doing, and we're interested in going along. And
right on the edge.
It's not the one. And it's really, really, really mad thing to just be. I mean, we've gone to UFCs before.
I was going to say, Chris, as something that came up in the interview I did with Spencer Kite, you came with me as press to that first UFC,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That was so
I'm
cool.
Sure Stu and Ian lanyard. Sat in the stands. Is that right? Did you come along to that still? The one that was early UFC.
I know the one Ian where we went with Tom Hardy.
Where did Ian come? Like Ian went with someone, and you and me were in the press bit, and we were in the little bar with Rampage and others. And then that event was Damian Maia tapping out Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
And like on the undercard, I think the third fight on the card was Junior Dos Santos knocking out Stefan Struve.
Yeah.
Wow.
Diego Sanchez and Joe Daddy Stevens
at
the top of the card. Nate Marquardt on there, Terry Ettim, Dan Hardy as the co-main event. And that was as press.
Crazy.
And again, it was a really weird one because it's something that you and Blake have talked about a bit. Yeah. I've got it somewhere. I talked about it last night on this podcast. Was it made me realise quite quick I'm not MMA media. Because we were backstage in this little thing and they're like, right, we've got Rampage coming in. We've got this guy coming in. We've got this guy coming in. You can have a bit of time with them. And I was saying to Chris, the prelims are about to start.
Yeah.
I don't want to be back here talking. Like, I love Rampage and I love all these fighters, but I want to be watching the fights. So we kind of bailed early.
Yeah. And then it turns out the ring
fights.
Girls weren't even doing the prelims.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Waste of time. But yeah, it's mad. But or let's have a bit of an MMA section then, and I want to start with a downer. Me and Blake talked about this briefly in the chat, how me and Blake spent most of our lives as Millwall fans, and both of us have kind of walked away from that a little bit because it's become increasingly hard to justify. Like, I've had years of going, any racism and things like that, it's a vocal minority, and you get to a point where you're like, well, it's been a vocal minority for the 30 years I've been going. So either it's not a minority or we don't care enough to get rid of that vocal minority.
Exactly.
It's
kind of, it
starts to become, and again, I think Mill have been mistreated so much over the years, but we won't go into big details there, but I've definitely stepped away as a supporter because of that.
Is it because they're not racist enough or?
A bit of both.
Yeah.
But me and Blake were talking about how we've gone from that to another sport that becomes increasingly hard to justify outside of it.
Like, so
when
the
president of the biggest company in it is caught on video smacking his wife in the face on a night out, and he's not had to retire or step down or be suspended
especially,
or anything so
especially
far. Can you think of any other sport or any other company if the manager or director of a football club was on video smacking up his wife on New Year's Eve.
Probably
they
be different
would have
if it was
step
FIFA.
Down.
What does this prove, though? The difference in here.
We spoke about this at length, didn't we?
We went into one on this. And the difference is, not a positive difference, by the way, and again, not justifying it, is that he's so plugged into the whole thing, he's virtually untouchable.
He's not, though.
You know
he's not, he used to be. Like,
well,
before
yeah,
it got bought. Now it's got bought. He's just a guy. Like, he would be easy to
I think the thing that gets me is people saying, but his wife hit him first. It's like, yeah, I don't think she should be president of the UFC either. I don't think either of them should be president of the UFC, but I don't care on your justifications. The dude should fucking go, he's a scumbag.
Exactly. I think on paper it sounds like it's easy to go, but I think his power is judged in many ways. Yeah. And I don't think power is always has to be position.
Yeah.
And I think that's the position, and I think the power is the position he holds, and I think that's the problem. And I'm not so
it's
well,
mad
I don't
though.
I don't
it's
think
mad
so.
To
it's,
me.
Oh, it's
mad
it's,
to me.
It's saddening. And so I ended up, I rarely comment on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I watched the video because I didn't know what had happened. And me and Shu got into this. I didn't know what happened. Obviously, the headline was Dana slaps wife. And then I went in. Then I saw what happened. And then you read
comment from Chrissy Goldtouch 69.
Chrissy Goldtouch 69 just said, "What is it? If you want, you know what? If you want equality."
fucking, it was so much.
But
of that.
it's so
fucking Bellings.
It's so like either side of the conversation I saw, because then I saw people so desperate to stand up for one side or another. That's what I thought was a bit odd. Like, you know, people would come back to me would then 10 times, like they'd say, like, he grabbed her wrist and he's 10 times stronger and he could have snapped her wrist. So if I was in a situation, I would have definitely cracked him. And I thought, you've had to then exaggerate what his first action was in order to justify her hitting him. And I think the problem there is that there was no winners in this.
No.
Like, and I think that Dana, Stu hates it when I call him Dana, right?
Yep.
Dana, I don't give a monkey. I ain't going to ever meet him. Yeah, he might be. Do you know what the weird thing is? I always said Dana.
Yeah.
For probably 10, 15 years, I said Dana. And then a few years ago, I heard someone say Dana, and I thought,
I've only
panicked.
Ever heard you say Dana.
Really?
Yeah, I've only ever heard you say Dana.
Oh, okay, maybe I'm a fake memory syndrome. Fair enough.
It probably only jumped out more as Dana, though. If you'd said Dana, I wouldn't notice it.
Yeah,
but,
right,
yeah.
Got you. I think it's just really sad. I think that the fact that either of them are just so, like, they both hit each other. She was so quick to crack him. Mm. And whether or not you can really go into, like, I've watched loads of people break down the psychology of why he touched her, which, well, that's because he knew that there was a slap coming. Well, the thing is, you can't judge that. You don't know that that's what he was thinking. You saw a very quick snapshot. All you know is that they both hit each other, and it's horrible. And regardless of the wind up to that, I've done loads of things I regret. Like, I have been slapped in the face by a mate, Mark Irvine, mm-hmm. one of my best mates. We were on a snowboarding holiday, and him and Greg and a few others in his room. I didn't know he was even in the room, but I was trying to sleep. It was like literally 3 a.m. and we weren't in our own chalet. It was a place where there was loads of other guests. Mm-hmm. And this room, I could hear it was getting out of fucking control. Like, there was mad laughter at like 4 a.m. and I'm thinking, I'm going to go and tell him just to, calm it down. I knocked on the door. I didn't know Mike was in there. He opened the door and he fucking slapped me hard, slapped the taste out of my mouth. And before I knew it, because I'm a black belt, mm-hmm. but it wasn't black belt in karate, but I used Wing Chun, I just straight line punched him.
Such a nerd that your instinct is.
And I straight line punched him off his feet. He fell back onto the sofa, and I felt immediately awful.
You
but,
put down his still beating heart.
But I didn't sleep the rest of the night because I felt so bad I'd hit my mate. So I do know sometimes that you can, that rage can overtake you. However, can I just finish this?
Yep.
I've had more than one female partner slap me, right? But sometimes, like, never like superly vicious because of some, one of my deeds, right? Or something that I've done. God, I make it sound like I do deeds all the time. I don't.
Deeds.
I'm not a bad boyfriend.
Not because of one of my deeds.
That's the name of your new podcast.
But I have had girlfriends somewhat play fight, slap me, but still crack me in the face. And I haven't hit them back. I've said, we can't ever do that again. It's just that should never be a thing. I know that you're half serious with it, but it's not a thing to do. Maybe it's me, but it's a real personal thing to get hit in the face with an open hand fist, regardless of who you are. I managed to stop myself, and I'm not sat here going, well, Dana should have definitely said, should have definitely done that or not.
Yeah.
Because in one way, I know what it's like to get instant rage. Mm-hmm. And in the other way, I also know what it's like to be hit in the face and then not act on it as well. Yeah.
But for me, it's like, fuck gender even. It's a massive size disparity. With you and Chris, there's a reasonable equality in size as who you are as humans. If a kid slapped me in the face, I wouldn't punch him.
No way.
I wouldn't slap him back.
Not in front of their kids. I'd fart in their face or something like that.
Again, if a kid slapped me in the face, or if someone who was that much smaller and not as physically large as me, I would restrain myself. Yeah. I might restrain them. I might grab them and say, don't do that, and try and stop this. But your reaction should never be.
And he went for another. And I don't know.
People broke it up.
I don't know if that he went for the other because he didn't connect the first time, and the sting was still there on his thing. I think it like what Ariel. Like I thought, how he presented it was good, but he's like, he done what I know who he is to be.
Yeah, I know who he is.
And there's aspects of Dana. He's somewhat his perception of honesty, which I kind of respect. He try. Sometimes I watch him in interviews and I go, yeah, I respect that. Like, I feel like you're being honest in that sentence.
Watching him salivate over Paddy Pimlet fucking shilling
for
him.
You could just see him going, yeah, this is it. He can smell the money, who he was to me.
Well, you already know, didn't you? I
don't know him. And I'm not saying anyone's directly evil or good. But like that, then you know, the second when he went in for the second slap, I was just like, Jesus Christ. Mm. And you are right, like, even though I don't think he would have broken her wrist when he touched her wrist, he's dominatingly larger than her as well.
Massively.
But
a trained fighter.
Yeah, we don't know the backstory of what come to that, but regardless, the real story here is we shouldn't be fucking hitting each other, man. Mm-hmm. Like as a president who has previously said, and I'm sorry, Stu, because I cut you off earlier. So you can say whatever worthless comment you've got on this in a minute. He's previously said that there's no coming back from hitting a woman. He said that.
Yeah.
And to me, like, my dad has brought me up to never lay a hand on a woman. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's in a way misogynistic, in a way, in the sense of what my dad has always been, brought me up to stand up myself physically if it comes to it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's right or wrong. That's not what we're here to discuss. But I know that I would never lay hands on a woman. He's said it and he's done the opposite, which means he doesn't mean that. Like, he took that hit and he then went and cracked her. In a public place. Now, maybe...
Which makes you fearful of what goes on in a private place.
Yeah, between both of them. Like, again, same for her. She's happy to fucking belt him. How do we know that... Again, it's all like theorising. Like, is it because he's never hit her before, but because she did it in public, he felt embarrassed and then he did it? Regardless, this is a no-win situation. But regardless of what happened, he said there's no excuses, although he said alcohol flowed, which then he's saying he's an excuse.
Yeah.
And then he's not paid the price for it. And whatever that price is, he's paid nothing for it, other than going, oh, mate, there's no excuses for that. All right, cool. If there's no excuses... you've apologised, but what are you going to do?
He's a rat. Yeah. Stu, any highlights for him, mate? Fuck him.
He's a rat. Can I have a beer, please?
Let's stop talking about that fucking rat. Stu, any highlights from the year or that you're looking forward to?
I really enjoyed Wonderboy's last fight.
Wonderboy and Kevin Holland was a fucking joy.
How amazing.
What a fucking great
fight. Are any of you watching at the weekend? It's 9 p.m.
It's not Gaslam anymore, is it?
It's Strickland.
Yeah.
Has stepped in. It's not the best card, but it's a 9 p.m. Fight Pass prelims and a midnight main card. So
I was excited to see some fights being lined up for UFC London. Lerone Murphy versus Nathaniel Wood. As much as I'm sad to see two absolute fucking amazing British fighters, Lerone... unbeaten, I believe.
Mm-hmm. But Woods never looked better.
But Woods had a couple of fights, but has looked in his last two fights. His trips and his calf kicks have been absolutely devastating.
Moving up, he looks deadly.
Yeah,
I love him.
And he's a small fighter for that division as well. Mm-hmm. But How super excited for that.
Where do you sit on UFC events at this point? Because our friend Brian Lacey reached out about the early tickets link and all that. I'm still on, because you and me have gone to some great events over the years, and I don't know if this is a boring age thing, but I'm now on the kind of thing of, I've been to a load, I've felt the atmosphere, it's great. Now, I want to watch in my living room with the best view in the house, seeing everything in great detail, having a pizza, having TV, my mates around.
Your TV is so big. Pip's penis is so big. Right. He doesn't need to leave the house any longer. But it is so big. The fighters are literally the same size.
Oh, genuinely, it's like, why would I go all the way to London? And I'm still quite COVID cautious and all this kind of thing. I won't bang on about it. But is every time things like that, like I've had a few people going, you go in London. And I'm thinking, probably not. And again, part of it is fucking snobbery, because we've previously had front row or second row time and time again. And if you're not in the front row or second row, it is a better view at home. And you don't have to leave the house to go and do it and all that kind of thing. So it's like, I don't expect to get front row or second row now the sport is so much bigger and all this kind of thing. So, yeah, every time it comes up, I'm kind of like, well, just want to watch in my living room.
You've only started enjoying going to the cinema while there's other humans there. So, I mean, you're not
really into that.
No, exactly. So you're not going to want to go. As you get older, though, like, I do find experience is tiring. Like,
mate,
like physically, but I don't need to. That sort of thing, I don't need to be there for, really.
Was it me and you who went to see At the Drive-In?
Yeah, we sat down. We had a lovely time.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get standing, and they gave us seated tickets, and I was like, oh, that's annoying. It's fucking lovely.
I was so reluctant
because, you know, we used to love crowd surfing, stage diving, mosh pit every time.
A mate of mine said, the older you get, the further out the crowd you get. It's so fucking true. Like,
and the sound is better. The sound is better a little bit further back.
Not sitting. I've had a few where I've got bands that I grew up watching doing retrospective tours, going to see the Lemonheads, going to see Grant Lee Buffalo, and my mate Jim booked like seats, and it was like,
who?
Oh yeah, you would never have heard of him.
Grant Lee Buffalo.
Yeah,
Grant Lee Buffalo.
And they come back and they play the seminal album, and you watch it. And it's
seminal.
But yeah, and it's like, when it got there, and you're sitting.
Grant-tiered Buffalo Seminole album.
Grant-tiered
Buffalo Wings. What are they called again?
Grant Lee Buffalo.
Oh, whatever, mate. You've got to make up a name for the podcast every time.
But yeah, sitting down,
a guess on catchphrase.
I'll get the Grant Lee Buffalo Wings, please.
Right, you can see Mr. Chips. What's he? Grant Lee Buffalo? No, it's good, but if it's up there, I'll give you the money myself.
Oh, dude, I saw a fucking New Order at the O2 in seats, and he's like, I don't want to sit down. I want to just, I don't want to fucking crowd surf, but I want to be able to move about a little bit. If I want to have a little dance, I want to have a little dance.
Deep vein thrombosis.
Yeah, there's that to worry about.
Put on your socks that protect you from that.
Got big old socks on.
Big old socks are going to be sitting for a long time.
Slippers. Which I've got on
now.
You've
got slippers on now.
Is that covering our MMA talk? I feel I've let people down because I've just made us rant about Dana / Dana White.
That. The thing that bothers me
about, I brought it up.
Dana is the fact that so many fighters haven't said anything that are on the roster.
Yeah.
Because they're all scared.
And a lot have defended it.
Yeah. I did see something from DC today, and it was like, he knows what he's done. He's come out. He's apologised for what he's done. He's aware of what he's done. He's aware that it's not right. And it's like, oh, just take that pay rise.
I used to hate, when I worked at HMV at Beckton, when I was running it there, Mangan brought me in and then left. And it was me and a few other kind of management team. And we had this security guard, and he'd always just do stuff wrong. Like, he's not allowed to do it. Either turn up late or whatever. And we'd get him in for a disciplinary. He'd sit down and go, look, before we get started, put my hands up. It's my fault. I did it. And after about the third time, we had to kind of say, you can't just do that, because that means you can just do what you want and then go, look, I put my hands up. I did it. I've apologized. It's like, nah, fuck off.
It's strangely liberating doing that for two reasons. One, owning up to something is good for yourself sometimes if you learn from it. If you're then using it as a strategy to be able to continue to do it, it's a different thing. Yeah. And there's another thing that we call fogging, which is someone's pissed off with you. So they go, oh, for fuck's sake, Chris, you did this. So I say, yeah, I did. I'm really sorry. Yeah. And also it was bad because of da-da-da. It takes the absolute momentum away from the person saying
what
it.
What they were ready to come at you with.
In some ways, it's...
It's like Eminem in 8 Mile.
Well, yeah, he does. I like
where he slags himself off first.
It's called fogging issue.
Serious problem used to walk on stage and go, right, before we do anything, to let you know, we're the worst band you've ever seen.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that was a given. And most people who attending knew.
A couple of notes in, everyone realised that anyway. But like, before they say anything, we'll beat you to it.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that was our MMA chat. Mm. to round up this episode, let's go on a positive.
Okay.
Old Chrissy Goldtouch, he did a proposal, didn't he?
Oh yeah, got
he's been tied down.
Mm, yeah, which was great help from the Love Ninja B Ducks.
You don't have to lock your daughters up anymore. Chrissy's off the streets.
Yeah, I'm off the menu.
I'd feel well, on the side.
No, sorry. Like, they're off my menu.
Most caution, maybe.
Mostly. 90%.
Keep an eye on them.
How'd that go, mate? Congratulations. Thanks, it was exciting. Man. Yeah, I know you talked to me about it a bit as you were thinking about it and getting the ring and whatnot.
I think Molly never thought I would. The ring's pucker. The ring's really nice and it's not expensive or what people would say traditionally, but it's just so right. It's so Molly.
Mm.
But I guess it's not really about that.
How did it go?
So the plan, the initial plan was, this is what I wanted to do originally, was I wanted my mum involved. This sounds mental. Yeah. But I wanted to marry my mum. And I couldn't. if she was there, at least if she was there.
My plan was at the altar to get the priest to mumble my mum's name rather than Molly's.
And in the speech, explain that my son was my uncle.
Do you... take this, Christopher Glasson.
So I wanted my mum there because, like, I think it's a big thing. And like the films I watch, movie reviews I got this year, like a list of movies to talk about, it's just shit I watch with my mum. I love watching films with my mum. And so I wanted to do it in front of her. and she'd forget anyway if we did. And the idea was I was going to have like Molly come over and mum say something along the line, get Molly to mum say she's dropped something under the sofa, which would have been fucking difficult. With someone with advanced dementia, but there might have been a chance it worked, and I would have been willing to take that chance. But unfortunately, things happened with mum's health at that particular time. I didn't want to leave it any longer to propose to Molly. It had been quite a while, so I couldn't do that. So then, basically,
and Molly was going to figure you out any minute now, and run for the hills.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Before she finds me out, I need to tie this down.
Yeah. I'd recently been caught cheating, so I thought I've got to knock it down as quickly as possible.
You sorted out the cellar.
Yeah. And I figured, worst case scenario, she says no and she'll be my first brick.
Exactly.
And anyway, so I thought we're in Margate. We do lots of walks along the beach. I'm going to do something beach related. And when I was clearing out my mum's house, because we had to move mum into care this year, and I threw away most of her sentimental stuff. It was just weighing me down. But she had a valueless glass bottle in the house and I thought, I could do something with that. And so...
you popped out your bum off.
Yeah. I did have another version of that, I didn't say. And I thought, maybe I'll go for a walk and put the ring in the bottle and then have Molly discover it.
Because you live near the beach.
Yeah, exactly.
Message in a bottle type.
Yeah. We like Walpole Bay and I thought maybe we'll do that. And the first weekend I was going to try and do it, which was on our fourth anniversary, the weather was so bad in Margate. It was like when you guys got in that water, it felt like that out of the water. It was
well, that
so
was the weekend
cold.
I was about because I was going to help originally, wasn't it? When you decided to do it, I wasn't about. And
yeah, so we had to cancel that. But then B said, like the weekend I decided, which was Easter Bank Holiday, fucking, it was going to be glorious sun. Her mum and her sister were coming down, which was going to just spoil my weekend. But I thought, well, I'll lighten it up.
With, I can't just, have my mum.
Just joking. Like. Just rubbing my face in it. Jenny, her mum and Daisy were coming down, which is really cool. And I kind of think Molly's very close to her mum and her sister. So I thought it's cool if they're there.
Mm.
So, but it's just like putting a message in a... I decided not to put the ring in the bottle because if I put it in the beach, maybe someone will nick it. I'm not saying they would, but if you are hard at money, there's often times when I've not had much money and I've seen an opportunity and been tempted by it. Opportunity. Predominantly my mum, but I still want to marry her.
A man of proposals you've ruined. Yoink.
Do you know what? It's fucking difficult to arrange someone naturally walking across an empty bottle in the beach because of tides.
Mate, yeah.
And so we had to do all the tide timing and I had to, I decided to put a note in the bottle and when Molly was away the week before, I was constantly, because my handwriting is dog shit. I tried finding nice font, but none of that would have worked. So I even started learning calligraphy to write it in, to an extent that would be passable. Anyway, I did it and I did learn like my old school when I was like 9. Did you ever do that class at school where you made paper look old?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did that. Tea bags and burning around the edges worked like a fucking treat. And the funny thing is when I burned it around the edges, I like such a stupid dick, I did it in the, I think it was in the bathroom and Molly was due back in about an hour. So there was all smoke in the house. So I was running around chasing the smoke out of the house. Managed to get the message written, but it wasn't till the morning because I wasn't sure I was going to definitely do it that week. Then the sun looked good. I thought it has to be now. And in the morning, I had to roll the message up really tightly and then tip it in the bottle. But the bottle, it could have got stuck in there. So I had to like figure out how to. Well, I still put it in the cork because I wanted to look a certain way. I had to figure out a way of doing that. And so I was rolling up this message like a joint at like 6 a.m. on my street. I got up early before anyone else had, went out the house, rolled it up, and it did look like I was setting up a spliff. So it just looked odd. And then found a spot on the beach that would have been the ideal spot, drop pinned it to both to B and her friend who I had to deliver it to.
Yeah.
Because her homegirl, B wasn't in because she, I think she was coming back at like midday.
She had something going on, like something unexpected happened that day, so was maybe going to not be there.
Yeah.
So it was all dramatic.
It was a massive risk. I thought like B might not get back.
So it was her lovely neighbour that was going to help out. That's
So a neighbour took the bottle with the message in it and then Molly and her mum and sister awkwardly were like fucking around on when they wanted to go for a walk on the beach. I say that like her mum and sister had any choice in this. It was actually because there's circumstances which dictate when I can do things with my partner. That sounds so mental, but I won't go into it any further.
No, it's about his willy.
It's about when I can get hard.
It's about his seven erections every night.
I knew I had to do it at this particular tide.
Mm-hmm.
But it was going to be like within like a 10-minute window of the bottle going underwater.
Mm.
So it's very, very anxiety ridden.
Yeah.
But eventually I got Molly down there with her mum and her sister and I'd explained to her mum and sister, just hold back at this part of the beach. And I said to Molly, because often oysters show up or the oyster shells show up and I was like to Molly, look, do you want to look for, shall we look, start looking for oysters? The bottle was in the sand, quite prominent. And I was like, let's look for oyster shells. And God bless her. She was looking around. I mean, she's actually not going to see it. But eventually she did. And she was like, there's a bottle here. I was like,
weird.
Okay, Molly, let's crack on. And she was like, I'm really, really serious. There's a bottle here. I thought, I've finally got a catch. So just act dismissive of it. And that will make her become more like, focused on getting it. And then she was like, well, can you get it out for me? Because I'm obviously a personal servant. And on this instance, I said, no, look, you found it. You get it out. And then she got it. And she's like, there's a message in here. I was like, pull the other leg, babe. And then she dug out the message. She read it, and I'd written a little poem about our relationship. And she, I think she was in shock, because at the end I then got down on my knee, which finishes the poem. I honestly can't remember it now. And then proposed. And she, I know that I was pretty confident she'd say yes, but she was in such shock she could barely say yes. I think she probably thought I was never going to actually say. But yeah, she said yes, and, you know, B was the one who planted the bottle. And weirdly, there was a professional photographer that I hadn't hired who was there.
Yeah.
And he took some photos. And
or B had cool bumped into him and was are you about for a minute?
Yeah, B's can you just hang something? Around and take some professional photos? Which is ace, because Molly looked great. But at the time I didn't think of this, because it was a little bit on the week I decided. I also had got my hair cut. But my hair, I just looked like, my hair was like really long and lank. And the photos just look horrible.
What's that homeless guy doing to Molly?
Yeah. She's not going to, don't say yes, whatever you do. But she looked great. I looked awful. And a professional photographer captured that moment. So it was dope. And God bless Molly for saying yes. And it was cool.
I love it. Cuties. Well, wrapping up this one. Was there any music from this year? Any podcasts of your own or that you enjoyed? On the music front, I'm fucking useless.
So out of touch, mate.
There was
Self-Esteem's album blew me away. Prioritise Pedro, really good. I think it's fantastic.
I love watching her performances. I think it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, I think she's fucking cracking.
Yeah, she's awesome. I like the choreography. I'm feeling that. I thought Kendrick Lamar's album was pretty fucking decent. I think he might be in my top five now.
Yeah.
I often think he's the Kanye West that Kanye wish he could have been. He's experimental and brilliant and not as problematic as some of Kanye's struggles. There you go. That's mine, Stewie. Go on, make up another band. Buffalo Wings.
I've not had loads of stuff that's blown me away this year. I like the Jamie T record. I'm looking forward to hearing the new music from 86 TVs, which is Hugo White, Felix White.
Oh, wow.
Their new project, and that Hugo produced the Jamie T record and has been playing guitar for Jamie T on this recent tour. But after a I Am Clute record, 86 TVs.
I Am Clute. Actually, I know those.
And so looking forward to hearing what they're coming up with.
You fucking are Clute, you cunt.
Some new stuff from Billy No Mates I'm excited about. And that
sounds like bullshit.
But apart from that, no, there's not been loads of music that's blown me away this year.
Well, let's wrap things up and do one more episode. You got one more in you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Got one more in me.
I've got one more
definitely
in you.
Been really well behaved.
We've all been quite well behaved.
Shots?
I'll end this episode by letting you know that this year I auditioned for, I was so hoping I'd get it so I could just tell you about it on the Drunk Cast. Magic Mike's Last Dance. Imagine if I'd got to be in the final Magic Mike film.
Yeah.
Oh, Magic Mike is so good. I know you guys won't acknowledge
I was the one who recommended to you Magic Mike XXL?
No, I'd already watched that. I watched that when it came out.
Because me and Molly watched that, the second one, and it was pretty shit. Like, we watched the first one.
It's not as good. I still really enjoyed it. But
yeah. Did I tell you about the time I did a striptease for Molly?
No! We've got time on this episode, or shall we start the next episode with that?
Start the next episode.
We'll start the next episode with Chris's striptease for Molly.
Bow, bow.
And we'll also go into Russians in London.
Ooh.
See you shortly.
Dartford.
We'll start with either.
We've told the Dartford story.
We've not.
We've told the Dartford story.
We'll start with either Dartford, Russians in London. In fact, we'll start with all three.
All right.
Dartford, Russians in London, and your striptease.
All right.
We'll see you in a bit.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was part three. I hope you enjoyed that. Man, I'm getting these intros and outros shorter and shorter. I'll see you in part four. Ta-ta.
Hold up. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.